Translation, Nityananda Prabhu replied, "These are the remnants of food left by Lord Krishna. If you take them to be ordinary remnants, you have committed an offense." Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. In the Brihad Vishnu Purana, it is stated that one who considers Mahaprasad to be equal to ordinary rice and dal certainly commits a great offense. Ordinary edibles are touchable and untouchable, but there are no such dualistic considerations where prasad is concerned. Prasad is transcendental, and there are no transformations or contaminations. Just as there are no contaminations or transformations in the body of Lord Vishnu himself, thus, even if one is a brahmana, he is considered to be attacked by leprosy and bereft of all family members if he makes such dualistic considerations. Such an offender goes to hell, never to return. This is the injunction of the Brihad Vishnu Purana. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeyaham Shri Guru Shri Yata Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragnatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpataru Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adaita Garada Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare So in this chapter of Madhya Leela, we have found ourselves in the middle of a serious, thoughtful, and at the same time jovial and almost comedic at times interaction between Advaita Acharya and Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, where he is feeding them a sumptuous feast. And we are in the midst where Lord Nityananda's just thrown some prasad at Lord Advaita Prabhu. And preceding this text, Advaita Acharya has said, to make me a madman like yourself, you have thrown the remnants of your food at me. You did not even fear the fact that I'm a Brahmin. Nityananda Prabhu replies, these are the remnants of food left by Lord Krishna. If you take them to be ordinary remnants, you have committed an offense. It's interesting, the word jhuta here in the verse. I know this is Bengali, but in Hindi, jhuta means it's been touched or contaminated by someone else. You generally don't eat someone's leftovers. But here we're hearing the opposite, that actually it doesn't matter if it's prasadam that's left over, because it has a completely different effect. So I thought we would unpack, before we get to really this beautiful pastime that's taking place, and how actually Sri Advaita is able to be so affected even by that prasadam touching his body. Before we get to that, I thought we would look a little bit more into why prasadam is given so much importance. In fact, you know, whether you read Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, one thing that I found very interesting is that Srila Prabhupada gives prasadam almost as equal of importance as hearing and chanting. It's there, they're almost in every paragraph where he speaks about prasadam, he will speak about hearing and the potency of both. And Krishna brings up this concept of prasadam, or food offered to him, very early in the Bhagavad Gita, in the third chapter, in verses 13 and 14, where he actually speaks about that food. This is in the context he's talking about rice, grains, the weather, nurturing our crops. And he's addressing this idea that, you know, to have good crops, to have good food, to have plentiful food, one must worship the demigods. And he's refuting this. He's actually telling Arjuna that everything that's offered to the demigods ultimately comes to me and comes from me anyway, whatever you're rewarded. He then goes on to say that actually, if you eat anything without offering it to me first, you're actually eating only sin. So what do we mean by this? If we just break this down in terms of prasad, and what Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport is that there's two reasons why we consume prasad. Okay, so the two reasons he gives, there's two aspects. There's the purification aspect, and then there's the relationship or relational aspect in terms of our relationship with Krishna. So if we're looking at it in terms of purification, everything we do here, everything we think, feel, will, has repercussions, which first of all start with actions. Okay, we also understand from our philosophy that everything has life. Every plant, every animal. And ultimately in Goloka Vrindavan, even the rocks, they also have life. And they have personality. But here, you know, plants, everything has life. So where there is life, if you take a life, there is a reaction. So actually, even if we take plant life, if we even follow the normal food chain, even if we're vegan, even if we don't take any dairy products, there's going to be some sort of reaction. By sin, you know, when we study the Vedas, we study Srila Prabhupada's purports, we understand that sin's not just doing something bad. Sin is essentially what it's referring to is a material consequence. And any material consequence, whether it's appearing to be a pious or opulent consequence or something that might appear to be negative, can bind us here. So Krishna is explaining to Arjuna that actually if you eat anything, because everything has life, ultimately you're going to get some reaction if you eat anything without offering it to me first. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna goes through which foods have what impact on our consciousness. So we have foods which carry an energy which is quite heavy, mode of ignorance, so putrid, rotting, grown in darkness. So things like fungi and meat, rotting food, this all comes under mode of ignorance, okay? You know, and you'd wonder, why would anybody eat putrid or rotting food? But we do. Meat is essentially putrid and rotting. It's very rare someone eats it fresh off the animal straight after it's been slaughtered. And even if you're vegetarian, who here? I mean, I hear lots of people saying they love eating cold pizza, like 2-3 days old. Okay, it's probably rotting by then. Anyway, mode of ignorance considerations may be a bit lighter when it's prasad, but you get the gist of what I'm saying. So if everything carries some consciousness, some energy, then you have mode of passion, food eaten, which is mode of passion, so things which are very pungent. Krishna describes too salty, too spicy, aphrodisiac. So these things agitate the mind. They increase hankering. And they do. You eat too much spice, it makes you kind of a little agitated. Everybody's too much spice is relative as well. We also have aphrodisiacs. And so, for example, we avoid onion and garlic because they have an aphrodisiac effect. Now, lots of people will say, okay, well, hang on a minute. Onion and garlic, I eat it all the time. What do you mean it has an aphrodisiac effect? If you ask someone who drinks a glass of wine every day whether they get drunk on a glass of wine, they'll say no, because they don't notice the difference because they're used to it. So if we get used to something, we don't notice the difference. If you stop eating foods in the mode of passion and then you eat them, you will notice a difference, even if they're not offered, just in terms of the modes. And then Krishna describes food in the mode of goodness. So that's which is succulent, juicy, fresh. So he's talking about vegetables here. These are the things he, you know, dairy, grains. These are things that are offerable to him. These are the things that he would preferably, if you're going to offer him anything, please offer something in the mode of goodness. That's what he's saying. You know, if it's good enough for me, it's going to be good enough for you. And these things bring peace to the mind, okay? And of course, they're offerable. Then the next stage is transcendental. Transcendental means rising above. Okay, by offering Krishna what we are cooking, then that meal is transformed. It's transformed into something which transcends the modes. Okay, so not only do we get the physical and the psychological benefit of eating, okay, the psychological benefit from the modes, from the way it's prepared, etc., but we also then get some spiritual benefit. So I'm just going to read something from the purport of the 14th verse, third chapter. If I can find it. So this is the third chapter, 14th verse of Bhagavad Gita. I'm going halfway through the purport. For this reason, the devotees of the Lord who are in Krishna consciousness offer food to Krishna and then eat, a process which nourishes the body spiritually. By such action, not only are past sinful reactions in the body vanquished, but the body becomes immunized to all contamination of material nature. When there is an epidemic disease, an antiseptic vaccine protects a person from the attack of such an epidemic. Similarly, food offered to Lord Vishnu and then taken by us, makes us sufficiently resistant to material affection. And one who is accustomed to this practice is called a devotee of the Lord. Therefore, a person in Krishna consciousness who eats only food offered to Krishna can counteract all reactions of past material infections, which are impediments to the progress of self-realization. On the other hand, one who does not do so continues to increase the volume of sinful action, and this prepares the next body to resemble hogs and dogs, to suffer the resultant reactions of all sins. The material world is full of contamination, and one who is immunized by accepting prasadam of the Lord, food offered to Krishna, is saved from the attack, whereas one who does not do so becomes subjected to contamination. So it's interesting, becomes immunized to all contamination of material nature. In one sense, even mode of goodness is a type of contamination because we become peaceful, we become satisfied and comfortable in this world. And where we're comfortable, it becomes very difficult to push ourselves in our Krishna consciousness. Being Krishna consciousness is not just about following the four regulative principles and chanting 16 rounds. That's just our foundation. So what Prabhupada's saying here is actually prasadam is, because of its potency, not only will it kill off our biggest disease, which is false ego, and from false ego, what arises? Fear, right? All our situations in this world become suffering because of fear. Sometimes we fear success, sometimes we fear failure, but that makes any situation dangerous, doesn't it? Shishirada Gokul Nandaji ki jai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Gauranitai ki jai. So danger in this world is determined by our relationship with the situation or the object. Okay? If I said to you, let's all go to the edge of a cliff in Dover and jump. What's she saying? You know? It sounds so dangerous. You'll become scared. And it'll become so, you'll feel so frightened and it will appear so dangerous that you will stop thinking. You'll become bewildered. Right? And because you'll become bewildered, we won't think laterally or practically. Actually, jumping off or coming down off this cliff to somebody who knows how to abseil or rock climb, they know how to manage the risk. So it doesn't seem so dangerous. So actually, Srila Prabhupada, he talks about this potency of prasad to have this transformational ability for us, for our intelligence to be spiritualized. He actually uses this term that prasadam nourishes the spiritual fibers of the brain. And until I read that, when I first came to Krishna consciousness, I remember reading that, thinking, I didn't know we had spiritual fibers to the brain. They didn't teach us this in our neurology lesson. It's amazing. And the spiritual fibers of the brain, really, you know, everything, every part of us, even our material body, can be purified and made transcendental and become a pure conduit and have a pure connection with our natural purity of our soul. So even our brain. So Prabhupada's saying, you know, it nourishes the intelligence, the spiritual intelligence. And nourishing our intelligence is so important because our spiritual intelligence is what keeps our mind and our senses under control. It is what allows us to be receptive when we're hearing, when we're reading. It allows us to tether the mind and calm it when we are chanting. So what we eat has a profound impact on not just protecting us from fear, but actually in our sadhana, okay, in actually executing our sadhana, so we derive maximum benefit. If any of you have ever been through a period where you have eaten all three meals of the day, cooked from scratch in good consciousness, offered nicely and consumed nicely, you will notice that when you've not been able to do that, your mind is not so easy to manage. Okay, it's as potent as chanting. In fact, so much so that Prabhupada said, even if we can't get devotees or new people to chant or read, first thing, you just offer everybody prasadam. It has that transformational ability. And it's wonderful because, you know, Krishna has made it so easy for us. Just in that verse, offer me everything. Okay, offer me everything. Because we have to eat. There isn't anybody here who doesn't eat. We all eat. He's turned something that was a material, essential necessity to a spiritual, not just practice, but spiritual celebration. Because we celebrate with prasad as well. So the purification that comes from prasad is, I mean, I'll move on to how we should honor prasad, because that is what maximizes the effect. But this concept that everything that is offered to Krishna has the 7% same ability to transform our consciousness. And if we can apply that to something which we all have to do, 3 times a day at least, then we can really maximize our spiritual progress insofar as not just remove our contamination, but protect us. This word vaccine is really, really relevant, really important. Because we often don't, you know, we'll say things, oh yeah, turmeric, you know, yeah, if we eat and drink loads of haldi, I'll be protected from a cold. You know, there's so many different things. Or if I have amla or hing, it's good for gas. You know, we think about our bodily protection. But we forget that actually, because we're eating prasad, it offers us spiritual protection. Because we have so many different layers of armor. The body is just a very superficial armor. We also have our subtle body. Yes, we strengthen that through the Maha Mantra. We strengthen that through spiritualizing our intelligence. But we can also strengthen that through our diet. And then we have our spiritual armor, our soul, ourselves. How strong is my real self compared to my temporary self? The stronger my real self is, then the temporary self, you know, it doesn't have so much influence there, but it's not so distracting. And we can actually use it. It's rather than getting overwhelmed by the car, we learn how to drive that car perfectly. So this potency of prasad in terms of purification is something that is an easy thing to miss. Okay, it's a missed opportunity. And I think it's a missed opportunity that the more we get into the habit of having prasad, the more we take it for granted and the less we connect with its potency. Think about it. I mean, I remember when I first came to Krishna consciousness, my concept and understanding of prasad is when you go to the temple, somebody gives you a little something, you know, might be a bit of halwa, or you get the sugar and the, you know, sauf, and you get, and that's the only time you have prasad. It's only Srila Prabhupada who introduced this idea that actually, you know, everything you have can be a prasad. Your home can be a temple. Your body is a temple. Everything you eat can be a prasad. You can have that same potency, that same interaction. And it's so exciting. We would even, if prasadam would fall on the floor, we'd pick it up and eat it. It's less than 3 seconds, doesn't matter. Eat it. You know, we would just, but then as you start having prasadam every single day, that connection, we start to take it for granted, because prasadam's all around us, mahaprasadam's all around us. So reading is so important, because it's chapters like this, verses, sections like this, that revive our connection with actually our privilege. We forget it's a privilege, we forget it's a blessing, and we take it as just, oh, something I have to do every day. And actually, it's interesting, the more our role is to cook, you know, whether that's in household or in the temple, it can become harder. I'm not saying it always does. It can become harder to connect with that and get wrapped up in the activity of it. Yes? And it's interesting, because in one sense, you can relate it to our varna, or the work that we do for Krishna. Because just the same way that, you know, we, in terms of our work, Krishna recommends that we work according to our nature. And so, because we, and as we work according to our nature, we become purified. We become purified of the attachment and the joy we get from working according to our nature, and get more attached to serving Krishna. And then we reach a point of what Prabhupada describes Paramahamsa. We can then do anything for Krishna. Similar with prasadam. You know, we've heard so many times, I mean, I'll move on to this, but there's lists of things that Krishna recommends we should offer him. He actually goes into specific preps. But then other times Prabhupada has also said prasadam is a matter of taste. Why does he say this? He says this because one thing with prasadam is we must receive it with some enthusiasm. Okay, and if we're eating things constantly, which we don't like the taste of, and we're already mentally blocked off to it, then opening the heart becomes difficult. So in this way, we also have this caveat or this permission that actually, yes, offer Krishna everything he loves to eat. But there's some allowance that we want to make it palatable. Because if we make it palatable, then very quickly then we're purified, and Krishna will give us the means by which to then understand how to prepare it, cook it, offer it, and honor it in such a way that we maximize the benefit, like a Paramahamsa maximizes all their activities, like a pure devotee maximizes all their activities. So we move from a position of taste for the external to taste for the actual potency, the purity of it. Right? It's you know, I remember having actually some very significant interactions with the Bhakti Devata Maharaj, where this concept of purity of the prasadam and the consciousness it's cooked in was very obvious. You know, he had a habit of only, and a practice of only eating once a day. And so, you know, devotees would make sure that that meal was very healthy, very opulent, very well-rounded, balanced. But most importantly, devotees would cook with enthusiasm. And, you know, devotees would often, oh yeah, this is Guru Maharaj's favorite prep, and this is Guru Maharaj's favorite prep, and he doesn't like this kind of meal so much. But one of my observations was that actually, yes, that everybody has certain preparations that they are fond of. But one thing that was very clear with him was that whether it was his favorite prep or his least favorite prep, he really was a consumer of consciousness. Twice that I really saw this very obviously was on one particular trip. And none of us were cooking for him. He was being cooked for by temple devotees in two different temples. So the first temple, I recall, you know, we sent the plate up, and I was looking at the preparations. I think there's nothing on this plate that's really something that he would, you know, enjoy. So let's see what happens. The plate came down, like 5-10 minutes later, and I was a bit worried. Maybe it's coming down because he didn't like anything, but it came down completely empty, saying he wants more. I was like, oh, I was shocked. I was like, okay, so refilled it, sent it back up again. And then he called me up after the second time, and he said, you know, Chithi Shakti, who cooked this? And I said, oh, I don't know. I can find out. And he was almost literally growling while he was eating. I'd never heard him like this deep rumble of satisfaction. He's saying, bring me some more. And he's going to find out who cooked. And he was so ecstatic when he met the devotee who cooked, one of the pujaris there, and the consciousness with which she cooked with. 2 days later, we went to another town in that country. And we went on Harinam. He'd not eaten for, I was now coming up to 36 hours because the Harinam was extended. And if any of you know Bhakti Devata Maharaj, you'll know that his Harinam was very active, very extended. He outlasted everybody, you know. So we came back late. And so I was, okay, we must prepare a really big plate for Maharaj. He must be so hungry. And so this mountainous plate went up. And so I was thinking, oh, good, good, you know, he'll be nice and satisfied. Literally, that plate came down 30 seconds later. Only one spoonful had been taken. And I was a bit concerned. I went running. I said, is everything okay? And he said, who cooked? This time, there was no growl of satisfaction. It was a growl of, like, almost, you know, disturbance. I said, it wasn't me. So he goes, I know it wasn't you. You were in Harinam with us. Who was it? I said, okay, I'll find out. And so I found out who it was. And I told him, I said, you hardly ate anything. He said, I'm not touching that. He said, I don't know where this devotee's consciousness is. It's in the gutter. Send the devotee up. You know, and then this devotee got, you know, chastised in a way that was relevant and appropriate for them. But it's this consciousness. It is literally, we also consume consciousness. We can either do that consciously, or we can do it unconsciously. Okay? So the purification aspect of prasadam is very important. But the other side, relational. Now, this relational aspect of prasadam is actually really very, very beautiful. In the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 27th chapter, Krishna gives Uddhava instructions on how to worship him in the deity form. And in that chapter, he also talks about how to offer him foodstuffs and what happens in that interaction. I just want to share one more thing with you. If you just bear with me. So anyway, I'll come to it in a second, but this idea of relational, this interaction we're seeing between Nityananda Prabhu and Advaita Acharya is relational. Yes? From the beginning, from before Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda arrived, Advaita Acharya is already, even when just getting ready to cook, so buying the vegetables, sourcing the vegetables, cleaning the vegetables, preparing the vegetables, is already thinking about who he is cooking for. Okay, he is thinking about who he is cooking for whilst he's cooking. He's thinking about who he's cooking for while he's offering. And he is certainly thinking about who he's cooking for when the guest arrives, which you or I also do, right? When we cook for family, when we cook for guests, when we cook in the temple, especially if we know which guest is arriving, when we're cooking for gurus, senior devotees, whenever we're cooking for somebody, it's very easy to start to engage in a very personal interaction with that individual from even before we've even put a knife to the vegetable. Okay, even when you're in the store. So this relationship aspect of prasadam is central to the potency of prasadam. So when we ask the question, how do we take prasad? That starts from the very beginning of even just sourcing our ingredients. So how do we do this? How does this take place? There's this, actually, I'm going to come back to chapter 9 of Gita. In chapter 9 of Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada talks about how is Krishna able to accept what we offer him. Okay, he's fully satisfied. He doesn't need to eat. Yes? He doesn't need to eat. So why do we need to offer Krishna food? Other than for our own purification, why do we need to offer Krishna something to eat? And how does he eat if we don't ever see it move from the plate? You know, if there isn't a little bite taken out of it. Because one of the reasons we get so engaged with cooking for guests is we like the reciprocation, don't we? Doesn't everybody here like to be told, oh, that was very delicious. Oh, that was very satisfying. Oh, that's the best meal I've ever had. Yes? And even Advaita Acharya, he's looking for this response from Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, you know, yeah, that you're satisfied. So how do we bring that personal side in our relationship with Krishna when we are prepping, cooking, offering, and honoring, when that reciprocation isn't obvious from the plate? How do we bring that in? So Prabhupada explains this really nicely in the 9th chapter. Why, my iPad is not complying with me. I have no idea. Okay, so let's go to my bookmark. So in the 9th chapter, there's really nice before where Prabhupada talks about the sound vibration. So in the 7th chapter, Krishna has explained that he impregnates the living entities into material nature. This is done by his looking upon material nature. And so in this instance, Krishna's hearing the devotee's words of love in offering foodstuffs is wholly identical with his eating and actually tasting. This point should be emphasized. Because of his absolute position, his hearing is wholly identical with his eating and tasting. Only the devotee who accepts Krishna as he describes himself without interpretation can understand that the supreme absolute truth can eat food and enjoy it. Okay, so his hearing is wholly identical with his eating and tasting. So we should not underestimate the potency of the mantras that we chant when we are offering to Krishna. Okay, because what we are chanting, Krishna is non-different to his name. Krishna is fully present to the degree that we call him. Okay, Krishna eats through our utterance of sound vibration. Just like when we chant the Maha Mantra, Krishna's fully present to the degree that we call him. So when we are feeding him, when we are offering these mantras, he can eat through that mantra. Okay, he can also eat by seeing. He can also eat with any sense. He can eat by touching. Okay, it's not a matter for us to see the result. And actually, we have some idea of that. If anybody here has ever had a cut or bruise and been comforted by an adult or their parent or their mother, just those words, it's okay, your bruise will go quickly. Oh, look, it's gone. If you've ever done that to a small child, yay, it's gone. The bruise is still there, but the child is experiencing that the bruise and the cut has gone because of the words. This is the power of words. And Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. You know, in the 27th chapter of 11th Canto, Prabhupada refers to, actually his disciples, they refer to this, they really remind us that Krishna has his own unique emotions. He's also there. It's not just us offering. There's someone there. And the key thing, the reason I raised the 27th chapter of 11th Canto is because our key catalyst and process for really developing a personal relationship with Krishna is deity worship. The deity is non-different to Krishna. Krishna is here. Okay, even if we can't see, there's a very thin veil between us and the spiritual world. Krishna's everywhere. Krishna's in our heart. He's the closest thing to us. Okay, closest person to us. He's in this room. He's in every atom molecule. But he's definitely on the altar for our eyes to see. And it's interesting in this purport, Prabhupada uses a sentence, who accepts Krishna as he describes himself. So we're very careful that the deity is formed and made in such a way as Krishna describes himself. It's not just made up. It's not idol worship. Okay, so we have a form of the Lord, which is as he describes himself. He is fully present. Okay, and there's a really wonderful verse here in the 27th chapter where Krishna explains this to us, how he manifests in the deity form. So the devotee, this is chapter 27, verse 24. The devotee conceives of the supersoul whose presence surcharges the devotee's body in the form corresponding to his realization. Okay, so our realization is, you know, at least in the beginning stages, very much based on Prabhupada's teachings, how Krishna looks, the form that we are attracted to. Thus, the devotee worships the Lord to his full capacity and becomes fully absorbed in him. By touching the various limbs of the deity and chanting appropriate mantras, the devotee should invite the supersoul to join the deity's form. And then the devotee should worship me. So it's interesting that actually, as we meditate on the form of the Lord, based on our realization, based on our spiritual intelligence, based on our reading, based on our hearing, as we meditate on that form, this supersoul, Krishna residing in our heart, also infuses into the deity, becomes very manifest in that deity. That's why it's so dynamic. That's why so many people have such different relationships with the deity, right? In some devotees, when they see Radha Gokulananda standing there, they see Radha Gokulananda as very, very young. Some see them as much older. Some see them as affectionate. Sometimes we approach the deity, we feel like we're being chastised, right? Why? Because depending on our level of realization, Krishna then reciprocates and manifests from within us to outside of us, in the deity. We are familiar with this in the guru-disciple relationship, but we don't often think about this in the deity form. Now, in this purport, Prabhupada also, and it's also spoken about how in relationship to installation of the deity. You know, installing a deity is not a one-time affair. It doesn't just happen on the day that the yajna is performed and, you know, lots of mantras are chanted. The deity is installed every time we approach the deity. The deity is installed, Krishna is installed and manifests in his deity form every time we approach, every time we worship, every time we cook something for him. Okay, him and his associates. Because he doesn't eat alone, does he? Okay. He never eats alone. In the morning at breakfast time, he's surrounded by his family and his friends. And it's a huge affair in Vrindavan. The breakfast time is a big, big, big festival. Okay, when he's in the fields, he eats with his cowherd boyfriends. In the evening also, he assembles with all the devotees. And very late at night, he honors in the forest with his gopi girlfriends. So, you know, Krishna never eats alone. So when we're cooking, we are not just cooking for Krishna. We're cooking for Krishna and his associates. So our relationship where the deity is very, very essential to this process of having prasadam that is as potent as possible. Okay? So in terms of how do we do this? How do we keep this fresh and alive? How do we keep this fresh and alive? So Prabhupada often talks about, you know, I've mentioned it a few times, the cook, the offerer, and the person honoring all have an ability to influence how potent or how receptive we are to the effects of prasadam, both the purification, but also the relationship, you know, we with Krishna. We all often hear, you know, especially if you're a grahastha, that your home is Krishna's. And one of the ways we can manifest that and really experience that is through our cooking program. Okay. Now, I will hear from a lot of devotees who cook. This can be both men and women. In some households, the men take the lead on the cooking. In some households, the women take the lead on the cooking. In some households, children start to take the lead on the cooking. But they say, oh, you know, we just offer everything we want to eat to Krishna. And, but, you know, how can I develop more of a personal relationship with Krishna? Cooking is a really wonderful and a really important way to do it. And it's actually one of the central ways we do it. If we can, and it can be hard to, you know, my child likes to eat, doesn't like gorilla, but my husband loves gorilla, or my wife loves spicy food, but my children don't like spicy food. So, and you're thinking, I have to cater to all these different palates. Or if you're cooking in the temple, maybe on Sundays it has to be spicy and during the week it has to be less spicy. You know, you're thinking, okay, I have to cater to the guests. But actually a nice way of introducing it is similar to how we do with our varna or our work or occupation or service. So just like in the beginning, we do it all according to our nature, according to our taste, according to our training. But then what we often advise? We often advise if we want to move our activities from a position of, okay, I'll do what's right for me and that will purify me as long as I'm doing it for Krishna in a way he likes. How do I then bring it to a stage of doing anything? We always, you know, Bhaktisiddhartha Maharaj would suggest that we should all have things that we can spontaneously do, but we should also try and have some activity each day or maybe once a week or a couple of times a week that maybe it's not in our nature, maybe it's not something we would naturally love to do, but we still do it as a service. Because that's what shows some sort of sacrifice, some sort of austerity. So that's actually very easy to also do in the home, in the household. You don't have to make every single meal, every single day, according to exactly what Krishna desires or what's been advised in Shastra. But if we can make one preparation per day, just maybe one dish out of the three meals, which is specifically, and you can also just make a smaller quantity. If you're worried, oh, it won't get finished if I make it, so you make a smaller quantity because it's specifically for Krishna, just like we do in the temple. We make deity quantities for Radha Gokulananda and Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman, and then we also make separate feasts for all the devotees, yes? So we can also try something like that if you are regularly having to cook. And this helps us to move away from cooking becoming a chore, right? It's always uncomfortable when our service feels like a chore, yes? We get frustrated when our service feels like a chore, whether it's in our nature or not our nature, whether it's our favorite food, whether it's our favorite activity, we can get wrapped up in it being a chore. So this is one way to keep it fresh, is that we can, from Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, there's items, in Srimad Bhagavatam, there's items that Krishna lists, where he specifies what kind of dishes you can offer me. He says, he actually names some dishes, many dishes, and we can pick. We have so many cookbooks. But one thing that's actually, I was thinking about how we eat very differently. Our habits around eating are very different now compared to before, okay? I remember when I was growing up, going to a restaurant was unheard of. You just didn't really go unless there was a celebration. And even then, 9 times out of 10, I think I've got pretty much every memory of growing up. We'd get home and my parents would go, I can make it better at home. That's like, there was no way eating out was better than what you could make at home. And then it moved to, okay, as we got older, few more restaurants. So it became, okay, whenever you go out for a celebration, and celebrations started becoming more frequent. As generations change, you know, and so maybe you were finding yourself going to a restaurant a few times in a year. And then you join the movement and it all cuts off completely because there was hardly anywhere to eat, which is fine. You have Govindajya Prasad, wonderful, okay? And then in the last, I think, especially in the last 5 years, we have had a massive surgence outside of vegetarian restaurants and vegan restaurants. And especially if you look at a lot of the restaurants, they're not even serving onion and garlic. And so it can become very convenient for devotees to say, okay, I mean, if you hear adverts like, don't cook, just eat, then it's going to make you think, it's going to brainwash you into thinking, yes, eating is the most important thing. But actually, our sadhana, preparing and cooking and offering, is the most important thing. The eating, yes, of course, that's very important, but those things also have value. So this is, I think this has changed our approach and our culture around prasadam and eating. Because, you know, we will sometimes use things that Prabhupada has said, which are valid. Like Prabhupada says, you know, if we buy consumables from outside, if a devotee buys it, it becomes pure. If we offer it in our mind, if we offer it nicely, it becomes pure. These are all very, very valid points. But we have to also be conscious that to what degree am I using that as an excuse to replace meals, which are actually part of my sadhana, to something that is a quick fix of really physical nourishment. Yeah, because there's also ways to physically nourish ourselves. If we bring it back down to the baseline, if you had to choose, you had the same dish prepared, exactly the same dish prepared by your mother or someone who really loves and cares for you, and that same dish prepared by an outsider that you don't know is in a kitchen, which one would you pick? You would pick that it's cooked by your mother because it's cooked in such a way that it's cooked for you with love and nourishment, right? If it was exactly the same thing. This is why people often come away from restaurants going, oh yeah, that was better at home. I'm not going there, you know, again. But in restaurants, even if it's vegan, even if it's clean, even if there's no onion and garlic, we don't know what's going on behind in the kitchen. I mean, it's wonderful. We have brilliant restaurants opening, like we have Om Nom, and you know, it's all about conscious eating and clean living. But even then, even when we as devotees get into the distribution of prasadam business, in fact, in those states, our consciousness is even more important. How we're offering, how we're cooking, how we're distributing. Because that's preaching. Right? Just like when we're sharing Krishna consciousness through words, we're careful about what we say. Yes? We're careful to not say so much that the other person makes an offense. We're also careful to not say so little that they don't understand. So similarly, if we are distributing prasad, whether that's something cooked in our own homes or we're part of Govinda's or other restaurant projects or Food for Life, it's even more important, even if you're just chopping vegetables, because everything is cumulative. Just like we are all a cog in the way this community runs, in the way this community helps each other become more Krishna consciousness, in the collective consciousness of this community, we are all a cog. So in this chain of from when verily eating only sin becomes eating pure prasad, our antibiotic and vaccine, to have a strong spiritual intelligence and also wake up our relationship with Krishna. So then we are a cog in that also. So the pot washer, the vegetable chopper, the cook, the person offering, because particularly when we're cooking and offering, you know, that's a time where we can, same way with the super soul, based on our realization, super soul manifests in the deity. So Krishna's already there. He's already eating. And the wonderful thing is, you know, there's no restriction in the sense that we might think that the only thing I'm offering, oh, I've made a very simple meal today. This is all I'm offering on the altar today at home. No. You can offer that. And then in our mind is a wonder, just like it's a cesspit for, you know, disturbing thoughts. It can also be a place for virtuous cycles of thinking. And it can start in as simple as understanding that when we are offering on the altar, we may on the plate have maybe two or three plates, preps. But actually, when we're feeding Krishna in our mind, we can have 100 preps, you know, offered to him in the most opulent plates, gold plates, silver plates, ruby engraved and embossed plates. We can make him, we may not make the best chapatis or the best sabji in the world, but when we're offering it to him, it can be the most opulent sabji, it can be the most opulent parathas, it can be whatever it is you're cooking for him, can be, you can maximize the opulence and the quantity and the way it's given just by thinking about it while we're cooking, thinking about it while we're offering. And when we're honoring, how should we honor prasadam? It is very hard, and I speak because I have made this mistake many, many times. It's very hard to have a meditative approach to eating if we're eating in a rush. Yes, if we're just grabbing a bite of prasad, if we're honoring our prasad at the work desk, if we're rushing around here and there. Physiologically, that is the worst way to eat, okay, because our digestion is poor. Psychologically, it's the worst way to eat, okay, because it's not so satisfying and peaceful. And spiritually, it's a poor way to eat as well, because we are less likely to honor it as prasad, right? It's just something we have to just get it inside us. So how, in terms of the honoring, at a baseline, if we can make sure we try and have, even if we've got to eat at a quicker pace and we have a limited amount of time, if we can do it quietly in a clean place, at least sitting down so that we can gather our thoughts. Same way we sit down, you know, our mode of goodness, the position one adopts to chant in the mode of goodness is to sit upright, right? Not lie down, unless you're sick. And walking around, we do to keep ourselves awake. Fine, you know, but there's different aspects even to that. So same with prasadam. We can walk and eat. You might be lying down and eat because of bed, but if at the best, actually, we should sit down in one place and eat. And if we have conversation, that conversation at the very minimum should be polite conversation and at best should be Krishna conscious conversation. You know, Paksitirata Maharaj would, if he was not honoring with others, actually he preferred to eat alone and quietly, and he would always read. He would always read some pastime of Krishna or have someone read to him while he was honoring. Because like I said, Krishna never eats alone. And there's always someone with him when he's eating. And we are with him. When we're honoring prasad, we are with Krishna. And Krishna is with us, both within, without, and also there fully in the prasadam. Prabhupada would talk about prasadam being infected with Krishna's love. Okay, and that we should be careful because it's contagious. And when we eat Krishna's prasad, we will catch that love. And then we'll never be able to put it away. And it's very, very powerful. You know, I'm not, I'll share something which is embarrassing for me, but, you know, it's, I remember soon after Bhaktisiddhartha Maharaj left, you know, I'd been staying where he was in his final days for 5-6 months, and every day was prasadam, 3 times a day. Really wonderful prasadam, cooked by Brahmins, offered by Brahmins, consumed in a nice atmosphere in the association of my spiritual master. I then came back to England and got back into the rigmarole of work and not enough time, etc. And I started noticing that I had a period of about a week where I would say I struggled to have that perfect type of prasadam that I'm talking about, eaten in the perfect way. It was interesting. That week for me was mentally rough, okay? And Guru Maharaj came in a dream. He said to me, he said, there's a very simple solution to this. He said, just be careful of what you're eating. So everything you're eating is affecting your mind. It was so profound. It was, and yet so simple. Huh, so simple? Just sort my mind out just by changing what I eat. Oh, that's easy. You know, but just the way he gave that instruction. So it's never too late. If we feel like we've got into bad habits now, do the next easiest thing, the next step. So if you're noticing that you hardly ever cook and eat your own meals, don't aim to do that 3 times a day every single day right now, okay? If you're not yet at the point of offering every single meal, or you're finding your offerings are rushed, they're in the mind, you know, you don't even do all the prayers, don't aim that, oh, I'm going to do it with every single one. What I would do is do the next easiest, safest step. Because if you were taking stepping stones somewhere across a river, you wouldn't aim to jump 5 steps ahead. The risk of falling off into the river is very high, isn't it? You would look at the next easiest step to put your foot on. It's the same with prasadam. If we want to bring, look at ourselves, are we lacking in our preparation? Are we lacking in the cooking? Are we lacking in the way we offer? Or are we lacking in the way we're honoring? And I'm sure there are improvements to be made in all areas. But in each area, we can just, if we do the next best thing or the next easiest thing, then we will feel like, okay, good, I'm making progress. And then before you know it, you will be eating as if you live in the temple and with beautiful consciousness. And Krishna is really present wherever you are, whether it's at home, whether it's in the temple, whether it's at work. You really, really feel his presence because you eat all your meals with him. Right? Imagining all our meals with Krishna. So Krishna's always with us. Don't we come together over prasad? Right? When we, if let's say you're at work and you have, or even prasadam here, whoever you sit and have lunch with every single day, you will develop a relationship with. So let's have breakfast, lunch, and dinner with Krishna. Let's have breakfast, lunch, and dinner with Krishna's devotees. Right? So easy, such an easy practice. It doesn't take, you know, we have to create time to chant our rounds. We have to create time to read. Okay, we have to prioritize. But eating, we have to do. So just coming back to, I just want to close on one last point, just because this interaction between Nityananda Prabhu and Advaita Acharya is so sweet. How is it that Advaita Acharya is able to be so affected by prasadam just touching him? Because their relationship is based on love. Love is the most powerful dissolver of false ego. We even know this in our day-to-day experience. When two people really care about each other, whether that's familial or friendship, whatever it is, that false ego comes down. Right? When we say, I can be myself with my friend, I can be myself with my every person we say, oh, why do you want to be with this person? Oh, I can be myself. Why is that your best friend? I can be myself. Are you close to your parents? Yeah, because I can be myself. Okay? Be myself means what? That regardless of what my circumstances, regardless of whether I'm showing my faults or my assets, this person loves me. This person cares about me. So I don't need to have a pretend ego. I don't need to put my ego up. Okay? And in the highest sense, when our love for Krishna is strong, Advaita Acharya's love for Lord Nityananda, Lord Chaitanya is pure. And he's a pure devotee. The false ego is completely, there's just no barrier there. And when that happens, then that relationship, even here we notice where there's less of a barrier, where there's less false ego, we can take pleasure in the other person's pleasure. Yes? We can feel the fear of the other person. We can be affected by them so much more. The subtle body and spiritually, we become almost symbiotic. Yeah, when we're very close. So if you've ever served exalted personalities, when we serve them out of love, we feel like it's a symbiotic relationship. There's a closeness. We understand what does this person need before they even have to ask us. This is like the first class disciple. Yes? First, we become first class disciples when we are ready to at least kick out our false ego in our relationship with a spiritual master. Okay, so we can bring that there. So with prasadam, if we can remove this, or at least start to dissolve this false ego, then even just by touching prasad, you know, sometimes as devotees, maybe we're fasting, we don't eat the prasad, but we touch like this, we've all done that. That can have maximum effect. So consciousness counts for a lot. Anyway, thank you for listening. Can we have some discussion, maybe some comments or questions? We have about